Welcome to part three of Queer Music Heritage, and I'm J.D. Doyle, bringing you this special edition honoring the work of Stephen Grossman. In this segment, I'm doing something I've never done before. I'm airing an interview done by someone else. But the interview is about 36 years old and is so rare and so extraordinary that I'm excited to share it. As my QMH show airs on the show Queer Voices on KPFT, and that's a Pacifica station, I have occasional access to the Pacifica Archives in L.A., and I got them to send me this interview from their library and to give me permission to air it. So I'm very much appreciative of this opportunity. This is history. The interview was produced by the Fruit Punch Collective on KPFA in Berkeley in 1975. The interviewer, unfortunately, was not identified, but I like the approach he takes of getting an artist to talk about his songs and then playing the songs. So the music is from Stephen's then fairly new LP, rather than him playing and singing in the studio. And after the opening piece, 5 o'clock song, they will talk about 6 songs from the album. In order, Caravan Tonight, Out, Song to Bonnie, Christopher's Blues, You Don't Have to Be Ashamed, and Dry Dock Dreaming. The interview is about 51 minutes, and I'm sharing all of it with you. Here's the Fruit Punch Collective interview with Stephen Grossman.
You lie there sleeping on my couch so softly, softly, softly. The curtains are swinging and swaying. My guitar keeps playing a 5 o'clock song, and I'm singing along, singing along. A tropical lullaby to bid the afternoon goodbye, a mystical tune to welcome in the moon.
Well, we're here talking with Stephen Grossman about his new album, Caravan Tonight. Maybe I should just start out by giving my general impression of the album, which is I'm very excited about the album. It's a lot of gay people are really thrilled to finally have music that really expresses a lot of feelings that they're having, and there isn't very much music around that does that. I guess the overall thing that I'd sort of like to lay down is sort of that I get that a lot of what I see happening in the album is trying to figure out how gay men are going to relate to each other. The traditional cruising scene, bar scene, bath scene is something that many of us have been around for quite a while. And it seems like you're reacting on that, and you're trying to, in your own life, trying to develop relationships that are different than that.
Overall, my overall feeling of the album, before we get into that, I guess, is that most of the material that is on the album was written within a period of about, I would say, a year and a half after I had come out, and there are songs on there that are misinterpreted, I think, like Christopher's Blues is often misinterpreted as a, and even Caravan Tonight is often misinterpreted as a kind of anti-promiscuity song, and kind of a, like people say to me, like, what's wrong with giving candy to babies and to strangers?
Yeah.
And obviously there's nothing wrong if that's where you're at. That isn't where I was at when I first came out. Like, I was in a political thing with GAA in New York, and the whole big thing then was, you know, to be out of the bars and to be out of role playing and out of, you know, stereotyped.
So you really had, this has all been a whole process in a way, and that, like, do you feel differently now about some of the things that are said? And
I would have said a few things a little differently, like Christopher's Blues. I perhaps would have made it more clear that there's nothing wrong with giving, that there's nothing wrong with promiscuity if that's what you're looking for. If you're looking for sex for a night, you know, that's far out.
Yeah.
You know, I've done that too. and it's on there too.
Yeah, it's on.
But people misinterpret that song, I think, a whole lot.
When did you come out?
Okay, I came out about 3 years ago. It was really, really difficult for me. I'd always realized that I was gay, like, from when I was really, really young. I mean, like, 3 years old, I knew. And I also knew, like, as soon as I could conceptualize it in any way, that I would never do anything about it. And I didn't, in fact, until I was in college, where I met this man who, prior to the time where I actually had any contact with him, I avoided because he was effeminate and I didn't want to be associated with any faggots because people would think I was. And we got caught together because I needed a ride up to Albany to go and visit my friend Bonnie. And he offered to give me a ride, so I went with him. We told each other our life stories, and he liked Laura Nero, and I thought that was really far out because I'd never met another man at that time who liked Laura Nero, so I really dug him. And we got back to our dorms like the following week, and he invited me over to his room one night, and we made it. It took us about 10 minutes to establish the fact that we had never made it with a man and that we thought we might be gay. And we made it, and it was a terrible, terrible experience for me. I was, like, guilt-ridden, purging and all that. And I called up Bonnie, who I was seeing then, and asked her to marry me, and she was hip, and she said, no, we better just wait. And because I told her I thought I might be gay, you know. And after that time, I just, because I reacted so negatively to the situation, like, I just figured that I wasn't gay. And so I just went back. And I left school, and I didn't actually come out until that summer when I was at this demonstration for a friend of mine. And it was just like a political, it wasn't a gay demonstration, it was a demonstration because a black friend of mine had been denied a job in Greenwich Village in 1972 or 71 or whenever it was. And we were just outraged. So a bunch of her friends who happened to be from GAA came down, and I was absolutely flipped out because there were these two men there, and one of them who was dressed like I was dressed and stuff and had long hair and the whole bit, and he was just walking around on the picket line holding another man's hand. I was just, that more than anything else, like, inspired me.
On the first cut, Caravan Tonight, you talk about your lover, Austin. Mm-hmm. Austin is feeling impatient or
possessed. The story with that was, he's younger than I was. He's like 17 or something. Mm-hmm. And he's just coming out. And he had gone through a similar process that I was. He was flipped out that I was a freak or something. And he was a freak, you know, and dug smoking and stuff. And that we were into the same kind of things. Unfortunately, we weren't into the same music. And
you talk about security in a relationship. You mentioned that before, that you can be as secure in a gay relationship as in a straight relationship. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like that you're looking for a relation, like a monogamous relationship?
Well, I've been in one in the past, for the past year.
Mm-hmm.
I still am, with Chris. And prior to that, when I wrote this, like, having never experienced a relationship with a man that I was living with or anything, mm-hmm. like, I had no idea what it was like. And I think I've learned a whole lot of things from it. I don't think that monogamy is such a good thing. And I don't think that I need monogamy to be secure now at this point. And and I can still feel secure within just knowing that there's someone near, you know, when I need the person.
Do you feel like in any way oppressed by being in a monogamous relationship?
I feel in our particular relationship, without getting into it too heavily, I feel kind of strange in that they're kind of, we both have double standards, you know, like, I want to do it, but you can't. And the way it works out is that I don't too often. Mm-hmm. He does. And it really doesn't bother me as much as I thought it would. And yeah. And in fact, I'm able to write a little bit when it happens. And so it has its good points. Yeah.
One of the things that in Caravan Tonight, in the first cut, the line, I'll be your oasis, and I'll be your promised land. It feels monogamous in a way. It feels like I have everything that you need, or
I am everything you want.
No.
It's kind of like I saw it when I was doing it as my feeling about promiscuity at that point, and even at this point, is that it's fun for a couple of nights, and after a while, you get really wasted, and you realize that that just isn't.
It's not a way of life.
And that was just kind of like when all your if you go around like thirsty for a real long time and no one's going to quench you, that, you know, I'll somehow satisfy that thirst or something.
Yeah.
I don't know that I believe it now with Austin in particular, but at the time I did mean it a great deal.
Yeah.
Austin, you got the gypsy in your eye. We have four good months behind us. Now you think I'm too possessive, though your head is on my knee. Your mind is just outside of town. Your ears are ringing for that carefree tambourine. There's a caravan tonight. It will be passing by our window. We have many years before us. Last night while you were sleeping, I put patches on your pants. And I watched you in your dreams, and I waited for the sun to bring you home, to bring you home, to bring you home. And if the freedom your heart embraces is nothing but a vision in the sand, oh, I'll be waiting here. I'll be your oasis, I'll be your promise, your promised land. Austin, you got that fever in your head. You think security confines you. My laughter weighs you down. You know the fault is in our ears. There's no difference in desire. I used to wander with my father's violin. There's a caravan tonight. It approaches in the market. There's a rushing of flounces and rhythm swinging feet. There's a boy in scarlet sashes, and he's calling out the names of the lovers that he left here once before, oh, once before, once before. And if the freedom your heart embraces is nothing but a vision in the sand, oh, I'll be waiting here. I'll be your oasis, I'll be your promised land, your promised land, your promised land. Austin, you got that gypsy in your eye. There's a boy outside our window with the moon upon his shoulders. Well, your kisses on my lips, your senses rage beyond control. Your heart, it's racing with this crazy castanets. There's a caravan tonight, I can hear it in the distance. You had many roads before you. Last night while you were sleeping, I put patches on your pants. And I watched you in your dreams, and I've waited for the sun to bring you home.
I really like Out a hell of a lot. Do your parents know you're gay?
After this album, they're bound to.
Really? My mother knows. I've told my mother recently. My parents live in Arizona. I live in New York. And I was never on really, really good terms with them. And I left home when I was 18 because of political things I was involved with in school. I was thrown out of my house by my father, and I don't get along with him very well. In fact, I haven't spoken to him since that day, even though he lives with my mother. I've spoken to my mother a couple of times, and at one point I decided to tell her that I was, and I don't know if she heard me. It was like, she said something, my father's a pornographer. And she said something, well, you're something like your father writes stories about that kind of thing, so I guess it's all right. I said, well, that isn't quite the same thing. You know, it isn't just pornography, and it isn't just being sexual or what I do in bed. It's like a whole style of life for me. You know? It's strange because I was on the phone with her at the time, and so I really couldn't feel how she was responding. I've told her, like, when she was still in New York, that other friends of mine were gay as kind of a testing to, like, ease it up. Because I figured if these are all friends who I had in high school, and I figured if I could tell her one by one who came out, that it would just be easier for me to say, well, I am too. and her feeling about it was, if they're happy, let them do it. My father would kill me. And I know if my father heard the album, he would break it. Or smash it or something, especially that song.
Is it true about
everything in every song is true, and every reference is just about is yeah. very, very true. Mm. It's very, very true.
It's one line here. Well, you didn't fail me, Mama. I don't love you any less.
And it's
that's like I think that's something that's very common that. That mother's
tend where did I go wrong?
Yeah, sure.
to raise this faggot. Mm-hmm. But you really don't feel like you've is she convinced that she didn't do wrong at this point, do you think?
I really don't think my mother understands it. And I really don't think she understands the impact it has on my life. And just how much of a part she played and my father played in my repressing it and how much I resent them because of it, especially my father. And I really don't think, I think she'd be very freaked out, like if I walked in with Chris to the house and, you know, sat down holding his hand or something like that. She would probably block it off
mm-hmm.
or something. She wouldn't see it.
You talk about your brother in this. And sort of wondering if he's going to experience the same thing you've experienced. Mm-hmm. And here, one line is, will you hate yourself inside? Have you talked to your brother about
my brother's very young. I'm not saying that a specific kind of family will raise a specific kind of person, because I've seen obvious yeah. evidence that there are millions of kinds of family that raise, you know, gay people. Just as I can walk down the street and intuitively feel another gay person, I feel it in my brother. He's very young, but I think he'll be gay. And I just hope gay liberation or something reaches Arizona.
Mama, dear Mama, I have something important to say. Yes, I know you didn't plan on me turning out this way. Well, you didn't fail me, Mama, and I don't love you any less. 'Cause to me it's just a matter of what suits me best. Well, no, it's hard for you to take, and it's nothing you would brag when your firstborn turns out to be gay. Papa, oh Papa, did I spoil your dreams? I know you wanted to see me marching in the Marines. Well, that won't prove my manhood, as it didn't prove yours. 'Cause
I went to talk to that landlord while you stood behind the door with her here calling me crazy. But I think it's out of fear, 'cause you're not so sure that you are. What you're gonna do if everything that has happened to me someday happens to you? Will you try to grin and bear it? Will you hate yourself inside? Will you walk with me in the sunshine? 'Cause there's really nothing to hide, 'cause there are all kinds of people happen to be this way, and there's really nothing wrong with being the way that you want to, yeah. Nothing wrong with being, you know, it's okay.
Go into a little bit more about Bonnie.
Bonnie and I were really, really good companions. Mm-hmm. I felt like she was a sister in lots of ways, and we had a really good sex life because we knew what to do to mm-hmm. physically turn each other on. Like if you close your eyes and someone comes over to you and gives you a blowjob, you don't know what sex that person is, and we knew what to do. And she was very, very strong in like helping me to come out, and probably because it was hurting her so much, like because she couldn't detect how I felt, you know, like she didn't know that there was something missing, and I would try to explain it to her, but she could never feel it. And so like that summer when I came back from college, she said to me, "Listen, I want you to find out one way or the other." You know, she said, "I'm going to Europe. You have like a month or two, find out." And she came back, and I did. And I'd come out. And we tried to keep up a relationship for a while, but I wanted to be out in the streets a whole lot.
Mm-hmm.
And so we ended at the sexual aspect of our relationship, because we thought that as long as that existed, she would like be demanding more of my time and stuff, and still looking at me as a lover, mm-hmm. which I wasn't going to be anymore. Mm-hmm. And we're still like super, super best friends in the whole wide world. And we sit around, our favorite times together are just sitting around talking about our new relationships and working them out. And a lot of our problems are very, very similar.
When you say, "Keep moving now, dancing to the tune of my song."
Mm-hmm. This one day I was freaking out because Michael had just slept with a friend of mine, and I was experiencing jealousy for the first time, and I didn't know what to do. I was running around the house, and the woman I was living with was having me do calisthenics, work off the energy. And I just didn't know what to do. I was just absolutely off the wall. And in the middle of it all, I sat down and wrote the song and went back to freaking out. It was terrible. And at that time, I was also into like Baba Ram Dass and Be Here Now. And I was the image dancing was just like the dance of life that he talks about in his book. Mm-hmm. A whole lot as kind of, we should just move on and just be open and stuff.
But you're not saying, I was sort of reading things into dancing to the tune of my song, and I was thinking of
You
should come out too, is what I was sort of thinking.
I've thought of that. I can't say that that was initially what I thought of. It would be far out if she did.
Thank you. your face again, to see your sweet face again. Well, I've been crying in the park on a Manhattan evening, just waiting for this madness to pass. We're both so much in love, but yet I'm only wondering, how long can it last? Just how long can it last? Why, I know there were times when I treated you badly, and I can't say I wouldn't again, no. But I don't even touch you now, tell me, what can I say to a lover who is my best friend? Oh, why don't you kick up your heels today and toss off your apron and dance to the tune of my song? Don't look for me outside on the street, cause it's time that we both go too long. La la la, 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 la la la. And I can't say I wouldn't again, oh no. But I don't even touch you now, tell me, what can I do for a lover who was my best friend? Oh, why don't you kick up your heels, hey, and toss off your apron, dance to the tune of my song? And don't look for me out on Christopher Street. Finally it's time that we both move along and dance to the tune of my song. Keep moving now, dancing to the tune of my song. Move along now, dancing to the tune of my song. Dancing to the tune of my song.
You talked about Christopher's blues before. I feel like it's sort of really heavy for me. It's really your reaction to the cruising scene.
And to bars and to role playing.
Yeah.
And,
do you think in political terms, like, do you think of a political analysis of what role playing does to people? Or
I don't know if I think of it politically. I think of how it feels. And I don't like people to assume that because I have long hair that I'm going to be femme or something, that I'm going to be the person who's going to be fucked. Or, I just don't want to be in a situation where I'm immediately classified into any way because I'm ever changing from minute to minute and I like to do different things. And even the things that I like to do, I don't think should classify. Like, I like to cook, all right? And I like to clean. But that doesn't mean that I have a housewife mentality,
yeah,
and that I'm going to respond that way in bed and just lay there.
You talk about pretending to be someone's wife.
Mm-hmm. The actual experience that prompted me to write that was, there were a couple experiences. One of a friend of mine who I met one night on the street and who was telling me about a sugar daddy he had for a year. And I was just absolutely flipped out because I had never, like, spoken to... I heard those kind of things existed, but I'd never met someone, slept with someone, a relationship with someone, had been through that. And it was like a halfway out of the closet kind of thing where he was used for show and he didn't really have to sleep with a man. And he was just like a figure piece. And he lived with this man for a year. The man paid for everything. And all Clark had to do was look pretty. I flipped me out because it just didn't help him, like, come out at all. If anything, it scared him a whole lot. And then it was another experience, and that was the first time that I was picked up, and I was on Christopher Street, and I decided tonight would be the night. You know, I was going to go out and get picked up.
Mm-hmm.
And I did, and it was by this, like, a Levi guy, and we made it, and he, like, assumed all these things, assumed that it was all right for him to fuck me without asking me, which I resented.
Mm-hmm.
And then he started talking all this weirdness about well, saying things while we were making it, you know, graphically telling what he was going to do to me and telling me he was going to rape me and stuff like this. And it was just a really bad experience. In a fury, the next morning I wrote that.
Yeah. Let me read the lines that sort of refer to that. But candy's all you get from a stranger. And I don't want to go down on my knees and elbows and not have you do the same, because you're trying to pretend that you're not like all your brothers who you feel are insane.
Well, what happened? That line is very specific, too.
Like, does this man, like, feel that he isn't gay at all?
The night we were talking, like, he took us to this place called the Wine Cellar, and we were sitting around drinking, and he says, you know, I can't stand these people who walk down the street with their buttons on. He says, how can you walk down the street and say that you're gay? He says, and they hold their hands in public. He says, like, they're faggots, you know? He says,
but what are you?
Really? You know? What is this man, and what is he doing? And, you know... And even though that was happening to me, then I still went home with him. I don't know why. I guess I know why.
Yeah. But,
yeah. Right. I think we all know why.
He was strange, but his whole trip was that he didn't want to be associated with what he called, you know, pansies, whatever.
Mm-hmm. Effeminate gay men.
Yeah.
Oh,
one night and I was just thinking about the first man I had ever slept with, the story I related earlier, and that song is to him, and I wrote the song with him in mind.
Let me quote a few lines from You Don't Have to Be Ashamed. You say we're finished and that we've got nothing to gain. You say our feelings are to blame, but kill the legend and the crazy are sane. You know you don't have to be ashamed. You don't have to be ashamed. It's sounding like you're telling him to come out.
For sure. They're pretty self-explanatory.
Yeah. But apparently he hasn't done that. Mm-hmm. Stay away from me, Stephen, or I might explode.
Yeah, explain that.
I hadn't seen Bruce, this man, for a year after we slept together. And he came over to my house one night. And there was an incredible sexual energy happening between us, like as soon as he walked into the door. And like, we kept doing things to like avoid it. Like, I made this big dinner. And, you know, I cleaned up everything right afterwards. I did the dishes right away afterwards. And just to avoid sitting down on the couch together and talking, because I didn't want it to happen. And I didn't think he wanted it to happen again.
Did you want it to happen?
Kind of, because he looked entirely different. And I was just really attracted to him. And it did happen. And he left right afterwards, and I was really flipped out because I really wanted him to spend the night. We don't talk very well. We're great in bed, but we just don't talk very well.
Maybe it's he doesn't talk very well.
Maybe.
These days, your days, they seem to hit you like a surgeon's lamp. A cold, harsh light intruding on your privacy. It used to be I could tell that you loved me at a single glance. But now there's something in your eye that flashes like a tail light at the sight of me. You say we're finished and we've nothing to gain. You say our feelings are to blame. But kill the legend and the crazy are insane. You know you don't have to be ashamed. You don't have to be ashamed. Your moods, they seem to hit you like the smacking of cards. Shuffled or stacked, you exclude me from the people you will see today. You used to say they were playing dirty, but now you're moving back. And you're looking up their sleeves and searching in their pockets for another way. You say we're finished and we've nothing to gain. You say our feelings are to blame. But kill the legend and the crazy are insane. You know you don't have to be ashamed. You don't have to be ashamed. Days, your ways, they're beating like the sinking of mines. Anchored underground, alone at the bottom with a heavy load. But take away the pills, the jars, the children, and you're on the line. Surfaced, you cry, stay away from me, Stephen, or I might explode. You say we're finished and we've nothing to gain. You say our feelings are to blame. But kill the legend and the crazy they sing. You know you don't have to be
don't have to be ashamed.
I keep going back to what I talked about at the very beginning, which is sort of trying to, like, in a way, you're searching for a kind of relationship, or each song is like a different relationship. One sort of aversion to the cruising type of one night stand relationship, and the other is a relationship like the one with Austin that is where there are fears of possessiveness and sort of dependency or interdependency, and then when you talked about what you're doing with the man that your lover's with now, with Chris, I feel like that's sort of changing, like that you're not as much, that you're starting to break away from the notion of having that one secure, solid relationship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that started happening after Austin. I came to California, and I came back, and up until that time I was on welfare, and I got back to California, and I said to myself, what have I been doing with my life the past year? And I said, nothing.
Traumatizing about relationships that weren't happening anymore.
Mm-hmm. Was I?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's about all I was doing. Yeah. And I said, I'm going to go out, I'm going to get a job, and I'm going to get off welfare, and I'm just going to do something. And it's so strange, because right when I started really feeling independent and self-contained and centered, I met Chris, and which kind of says something to me, like, when you want it the most, you're not going to get it, but when you least expect it, you'll find it in your back pocket or something.
Well, you're not so frantic for it. I mean, other people maybe pick up the vibrations and dry dock dreaming.
That's the pits. I wrote that up in the country too. There was no specific motivation so much as mood that I wanted there, of trying to get across the feeling of sitting on a dock and waiting, and just waiting, and what it's like the next morning when it doesn't happen. And also realizing my potential to turn into that, into the type of person, the type of gay person who I figured would just come for a quick bang and then go. And I think that's very much part of my potential. Because I've done it.
Yeah.
It's just a purging.
It's like this two extremes again.
No, I'm a double Virgo. You should also know. From nothing mediocre, right? Yeah. It's like you're either really happy or really in the pits, you know, really depressed. And even my boredom, like I just don't experience regular boredom. It's like incredible boredom.
Yeah.
Like that nothing could help. The only alternative is slit wrists or something. And that's that song, I just felt in many ways just shows me as both sides, because I'm just so many people, I think.
But it's a real paranoia that might happen, that's part of you, but that...
It's a paranoia, and at the same time, it's real, because it has happened.
Yeah.
And it's also a lament that it's happened.
Down at the docks by the cool Hudson River, past the silver dollar cafe. Men in their trucks come with me to deliver
quickly they could on their way. Down where the addicts nod and shiver on their way to the methadone. I looked for a gift, but found nothing to give her. So I tried to set this madness, afloat. Oh, camping and screaming down that misery line. Jada dream with a stand of leaving. Oh, I got to get my working out here on bed. Oh, what you do to my body, you can do to my head, or do to my head. I'm anxious and angry and want to go home, but not all alone. Down at the dock with the moon in my mirror and the sea storm to remember you back. Men at the trucks come with hope to deliver the worldly leave to die. Down where the rookies all left and shelved on their way from patrolling the pier. Look for a gift, but found nothing to give. So I buried my hands, in his hair. Morning, this madness is stormy, burning like a blister, want to burst, tried and dreaming, trusting and bleeding, knowing yet needing and expecting the worst, tried and dreaming of staying, of leaving. So you got to get your out here or in bed, what I do to your body, I can do to your head, oh, do to your head. Well, come on, mister, let's do it again. Oh, devil, won't you leave me? I'm turning to stone, I'm anxious
Idaho. But please, not alone.
This is J.D. Doyle putting the closing notes on the show, and as I think I've amply conveyed, Stephen is one of my gay music heroes, and I've been waiting for this new CD for many years. So this show has been one of my dreams. I thank you for letting me share it with you.